Women's Wellness on Friday, April 20th, 2007. I will open up a work session on 3166. Andy.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 3166 is a measure that would instruct the Department of Transportation to provide applicants for driver's license or identification card with information about the state policy and benefits for anatomical gifts.
Okay. Colleagues, we're going to be sending this off to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means without recommendation. Do we just need to a voice vote on this, right? We just everybody.
You should do your regular motion.
Okay.
Without recommendation.
All right.
Well, you do need a motion.
Okay. I just want to send it over. Okay. Thanks. Okay. Kotek?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3166 with a no recommendation to the Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Yes, great. Representative Kotek moves House Bill 3166 to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means without recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I do want to say that each one of the members of the committee received a letter from the Pacific Northwest Transplant Bank about the state of New York. And because we're passing on with no recommendation, I'm not going to read it, but I just want to take note that information clearly needs to be included.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. All right. Any further discussion? Do we need a voice vote? We can either say it's done.
Sure. I think you should do like the record as you send it out of committee.
Okay. All right. Susan, would you take the roll, please?
Mrs. Allen?
Aye.
Mrs. Maurer?
Aye.
Mrs. Gilster?
Absent. Oh, no. Excuse.
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Mr. Kotek?
Aye.
Mr. Kilney?
Aye.
Mr. Kilney?
Aye. House Bill 3166 passed with a constitutional majority and goes to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. We close the work session on 3166. I will open up the work session on House Bill 2881. Andy.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 2881 would create a commission for the deaf and hard of hearing to work for the implementation and establishment of economic, social, legal, and political equality for the deaf and hard of hearing. It would specify membership and the duties of a commission. It would provide that the Oregon Advocacy Commission Office provide administrative support for the commission. Chair, there is a -1 amendment, which members you should have, and Susan, if you could make those available to the audience. The -1 amendment on page 2 of the bill, lines 21 and 22, would strike the language having to do with basically stating that this hard of hearing and deaf and hard of hearing individuals are not considered disabled. That language would be removed under the amendment.
All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I move the -1 amendments to House Bill 2881.
Representative Olson moves House the -1 amendment to 2881. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Right. And Madam Chair, I would move 2881 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Please go to Ways and Means.
Okay, with the directions of the Ways and Means.
Great, thank you. Representative Olson moves that House Bill 2881 as amended goes to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. All in favor say aye.
Discussion?
Yes, for discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to mention that I was very compelled by the testimony that we heard, and I want to appreciate everyone coming forward to talk about the need for this kind of commission. I have concerns about putting it with within the Oregon Advocacy Commission structure, primarily because I think it should be a standalone commission. But I do think it makes sense to move it on to Ways and Means for the discussion, and I think it's very much merited in terms of the need and what it could provide for the state. So I just wanted to mention that for the record.
Great. Thank you so much, Representative Kotek. Any further discussion? All right. Okay, Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Fallon? Aye. Representative Delter? Aye. Excused? Representative Gilliam? Yes. Representative Kotek? Aye. Representative Bauer? Aye. Representative Olson? Aye. Chair Tomlin? Aye.
House Bill 2881 is amended, has been sent to the floor to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation, having received the constitutional majority. And I will close the work session on House Bill 3113. And are we ready for Tina?
Yes, as we begin.
All right.
We have the amendments.
All right. We will open up the work session on House Bill 2469.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have several items for the committee today, and hopefully this will be the conclusion of our fabulous discussions and move this on to Ways and Means. We have, our office has prepared a small packet of one-pagers on the three topics that are, in addition to, they are the add-ons to the design that are not assumed in the governor's budget. And so one of them is on the child support pass-through, one of them is on transitional medical, and the last one is on the deprivation criteria. So once those get passed around, I'll come back to those, but we want to specifically address those issues because of the budget issue. You also have the dash 15s, which incorporate, this is essentially 2469 as amended with all the omnibus amendments. So it looks a little different than the previous versions because it's the entire bill, hence why it's 43 pages. The dash 13s, which we'll discuss, are everything in the dash 13 is in the 15s except the issue around deprivation. I'm going to suggest a compromise on the deprivation criteria discussion, and that's what the 13s are. And then the 14s are an amendment to the previous discussion we had around the implementing greater access to post-secondary education, which is was an amendment to the Parents of Scholars statute from before. So this addresses one of the department's concern about implementation date. So, Chair, is there a particular way you want me to do this? Do you want to move them separately and discuss them one at a time? I'm trying to think what's the easiest way to go through this. I can describe the 15s. The 15s have some hand notes on them. And we pretty much incorporated everything the department raised from the hearing on Monday. And Joel went through and marked these. So we maybe I'll just address those.
Did you want anybody from the department to be a part of this discussion?
I don't think it's necessary, but they're here if there are questions. I mean, I think
okay. This is sort of a huge thing going on, mm-hmm. So either you can stay here or you can move down with the in the department.
Up to you, ma'am.
And then it might be easier to ask questions.
I'm happy to go. Yeah,
why
that's
don't
fine.
We do that?
Okay. Sure.
And if the department could come up, please, mm-hmm. That would be great. And at 9 o'clock, there will be a moment of silence for the tragedy that recently happened in a university in Virginia. And we will stay here, but we will have a moment of silence at 9 o'clock.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44. So I'm guessing the easiest way to start is to look at the dash 15s, and just for disclosure, the department has just seen these this morning, as have we, but I'm confident that we're going to have, if not complete, very close agreement, just because we were watching what we were doing in LC, so I think we're good. So what we try to do in the 15s, and they're hand-marked, is to address some of the committee's comments from Monday, as well as address the items the department wished to see changed in their letter of April 16th from the other day. So I'm actually going to start with the department. I'm going to walk through the hand notes. So one of the things that was mentioned was the confusion, the terminology around caretaker relative. We really weren't able to go back through and make too many changes there. We really need that technical language. But what we've included here is a definition of caretaker relative, which you'll see on the very first page, which describes what that is. And then also, if you see at the top of page 3, we're clarifying the word needy, because the program terminology is needy caretaker relative or non-needy caretaker relative. Sometimes that means the parent, sometimes it doesn't. So we really couldn't take that out because that's required language for the program. But hopefully having the definitions will clarify that a bit for the next person reading this. On page 5 of the dash 15s, we have marked there the section on new mothers. And here I think we tried as where we could to put in the word parent to make that a little easier. So you'll see that sprinkled there. It's not completely replacing caretaker relative, but we tried to put parent in there to make that section a little more understandable. Also on line 20, section B there, the department had asked that we have parenting classes for the parents, and we agreed with that. We added one word. We added the word evidence-based in front of parenting classes. So you'll see here the department may require a parent or a child, parent of a child under 12 months of age to participate in evidence-based parenting classes or family stability activities. So that was addressing the department's request.
Madam Chair, quick question on that.
Representative Maurer.
Thank you. How can we require a parent to take evidence-based parenting classes and we can't require a participant to take a medical assessment?
Chair Tomei, Representative Maurer, for the record, my name is Dave Leida. I'm with Department of Human Services, Children's, Adult, and Families. The ADA requirements are really what drive our ability to require someone to disclose a disability or something like that, as opposed to a parenting class, which would be a service that we could require as part of a jobs plan.
Follow up. So are we...
What?
Are we translating any medical condition as a disability?
Chair Tomei, Representative Maurer. That's more or less our translation of that as far as a requirement. What when we identify or the client self-identifies a medical issue, as a reason for non-participation, we provide them with forms and those kind of things that they can take to their medical provider and have them fill them out as a method of exempting them or to determine the appropriate jobs type services that we would have them participate in as part of their case plan.
I understand the answer, but I'm not necessarily happy with that. But we'll move on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 7, we have some sections on the child support pass-through. We have a minor amendment there from the department clarifying prescribing and rule how the disregard would work. I believe that's the only change from before. There was just that minor amendment there. So essentially, just to remind, I'm just pointing out the things that were different from the last set. So on page 9, we reference the sanction reporting, but that That hasn't changed from last time. That's still asking for a report to the Family Services Review Commission on how the sanction policy is working. On page 10, we're making some clarification here around the time limits. There's no change there on page 10, but on page
13, is that the change?
Well, we're just clarifying. We've clarified the hardship language in here. I'm trying to think of what is substantial difference from before. I'm trying to figure that out. We didn't change
anything. For the record, my name is Joel Fisher, legislative assistant to Representative Kotek. The change that was made here was in regards to item F.
Charles Page.
Item F on page 12 previously has a mental health condition or an alcohol or drug abuse problem that is a barrier to participation or employment, and it was only on that particular item, but it kind of applied to all of them. It was a little, there was some question as to the clarity there, so we kind of deleted all of our previous hardship language, put in some new stuff. And for the record, some of the confusion has been, as I mocked this up, I referenced some sections for clarification, and then some sections that had been changed since the last time. So that's where some of this confusion has come up.
So thank you, Joel. And so remember, we had that discussion about somehow we were singling out mental health and alcohol and drug abuse as being a barrier, but we were really looking at the whole list as potentially inhibiting participation or employment. So we were just clarifying that.
That's not a change from before.
The note on page 13, that is not a change from before. That's right. Just clarification. Okay. On page 15, you see that we changed to clarify state family pre-SSI/SSDI. The department asked for the pre language to be added there.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative
Kotek.
Yes.
What you just mentioned on the pre-SSI, is that already established, or is this now all of a sudden a new program? I guess apparently it's a new program.
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, it is. This is the part of the, I like to think of it more as a track, but technically it's written here as a program. The idea of if it makes more sense to have an individual move down the path of applying for SSI or SSDI or in combination, that's what this would set up. This would be a state-funded program, at which time if the person did get on SSI, the state would be reimbursed for those federal benefits. But this does essentially create a TANF-related SSI/SSDI program. The pre was added because
within the department.
Within the department. I'd like to think of it in the TANF umbrella.
Okay. So, follow up, ma'am. So, this is going to be part of the fiscal then, too.
Yes, and this is assumed in the fiscal right now, Madam Chair, Representative Olson.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. In regard to the department's. There were two things that we didn't change from the department's suggestions, and I just want to clarify what those are. I'm not sure you have their letter in front of you, but on page 4 from their letter from the other day, second paragraph there, they talked about wanting to modify a subsection in this Prestana?
Yes.
No, please. Okay, so back to the sanction policy. The department had requested some modest language changes that to be honest, I didn't think was necessary, so we did not make that. They wanted to change when we're doing the screening for sanction. It currently reads, until the department has provided the caretaker Can you show me that section? I don't know if you want to address the section. So as we recall, we're putting in a sanction policy, and we've created a mechanism to make sure that there's proper screening going on before the sanction takes place. Page eight of the dash routine. So on line 9, section C, current language reads, until the department has screened for and, if appropriate, assessed barriers to participation, including but not limited to physical or mental health needs, substance abuse, domestic violence, or learning needs. The department asks that we adjust that language to say, until the department has provided the caretaker relative the opportunity to be screened for and blah, blah, blah. I was uncomfortable with the idea of changing that to say that the department had provided the caretaker relative the opportunity to be screened. I thought that was left the door open of not allowing the screening to take place. You could always provide the opportunity for screening, but that wouldn't guarantee the screening would actually happen. And so that was my concern about adding that language. I don't know if the department wants to comment on that.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, Vic Todd, administrator for the self-sufficiency programs. Our concern with that provision in terms of why we were proposing a change was that although we would offer and refer for screening if the client didn't avail to that, we felt it might leave us unable to do a sanction or do further action because the screening had not in fact taken place. We're comfortable with this as it is, so we think we can work through that that piece, so that there's no issue for us there.
Thank you. Also on page 8 at the very bottom of the page, where you see the reference to 90 days, this is the time frame from which there would be an ability for the person who is entering into the sanction process to apply for a hearing. And we had 90 days in the amendments. The department had wanted that to be within 45 days of notice, whichever occurs first. And we've left it that same, the way it is in the original amendment. So,
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, and we're fine with the 90 days. However, we would recommend changing the last piece of that. Actually, it's on page 9, line 1, to say rather than reduction or termination of aid, to say notification of intended action, and that would bring us into alignment with the federal requirements.
So are we going to do a conceptual amendment for this?
Madam Chair, I just want to clarify my previous comment and then respond to that. We actually didn't have a time frame before in the previous amendment, and the department felt it was too open-ended, and we agreed with that because we didn't clarify what was the time frame upon which someone could ask for a hearing once they were notified of sanction. So we added in the 90 days. They prefer 45 and clarifying at what point that 45 days started. We have consulted with legislative counsel, and they're preparing a letter to say that we can do the 90 days as this is written. That is not a problem with federal regulations, and so that's why we're leaving it the way it is.
Mr. Todd?
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, our understanding of it is that it needs to be from the point of notification. So we can further explore that, but at this point, that's our recommendation would be to go to the notification of intended action.
Madam Chair, I would be comfortable bringing this up to explore it further with the department as a potential housekeeping amendment in Ways and Means, but I do feel comfortable with the information we've received from legislative counsel. We haven't had a chance to discuss it further since we had that opinion, I think, as of yesterday. So we can deal with that. If that would be
yes, could you
with the committee
the record,
in Ways
right.
and Means? Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you. I believe that's all of the changes addressing the department's concerns, but let me just double check. The emergency clause. The department had asked for have a different operative date to be attached to the emergency clause to take effect on October 1, 2007 to align with the federal fiscal year. Oh, I'm sorry, page 43. So the department had asked to clarify the emergency clause.
October 1st,
08? No, starting the 1st of 2007, because with the emergency clause, we would have started maybe a little earlier, and we wanted to start, be aligned with the start of the federal fiscal year.
I see.
Chair Tomei, my name is Joel Fisher for the record. One of the requests that the department had made would be adding language in the SSDI program, which would be page, I guess the fastest, page 15 in subsection 5 of section 8 to add language that would say including participation in appropriate family stability activities. It was something that we didn't add, and we feel that there's plenty of room here for the department to be including those activities without us explicitly putting it in statute.
And Mr. Todd, you're in agreement with that?
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I missed that piece on
I'm sorry, let me just clarify that. So on page 16, beginning at the end of line.
I'm sorry, it's 9 o'clock. Is that what you were going to say, Representative Gilliam? So we're going to have a minute of silence in honor of the tragedy in Virginia.
Gillian. So on page 16, beginning with the end of line 7, the department where this is for the pre-SSI-SSDI program, it says the department by rule may establish policies for monitoring and encouraging full engagement in the program. And the department had asked for a change to add the wording including participation in appropriate family stability activities to the end of that sentence. And we think that there's a lot of flexibility there by saying in rule, so we didn't add that. I don't know if the department wants to say, have any comment on that.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, we were just looking to have that concept throughout. So while we do the same in the new parents in terms of enabling us to address issues around family stability, that the intent was the same here, was just to include that language that we can require activities that deal with family stability issues as part of this program. I agree with Representative Kotek, it's not critical, but I think it just conveys a message.
Thank you, Mr. Todd. Madam Chair, I think we meant to make that change, and it didn't get in there. Can we add that to the housekeeping item to add for Ways and Means?
Please do. I think the committee would concur.
I think it's a clarification. I don't think it just further clarifies the rules, I would think. So.
Thank you.
If those are only two minor things we have to add, I think we're doing good.
I think great.
So that is, I believe, all of the changes from Monday in the overall omnibus and the dash 15s. I don't know if people have their DHS letter. If we're missing anything, maybe just take a second to see. I think we, I know we jumped around a little bit, but it's kind of all over in the document. So.
Any questions? Representative Nava, you look confused.
No, I guess my major concern is around the fiscal. And
well, let's get on to that.
Oh, okay.
Any other questions before we turn to the fiscal?
Well, right. Madam Chair, may I discuss the other two amendments before we move them and
sure.
Then get to the fiscal? So on the dash 14s, this was also something the department had requested. It's in a separate amendment. This was the, as you recall, removing the barrier that exists in statute right now to allow the department to pursue more opportunities for a limited part of the caseload to pursue post-secondary education. And the department's concern about it was waiting to implement that expansion of access to post-secondary education until October 1st of 2008 to get a sense of how the participation rates were going. We're fine with that. That's what the dash 14 does. Deletes that inhibiting section and puts an operative date of October 1, 08. So that's what the dash 14s are.
Okay.
So if we could move on to the dash 13s, then this will get us into some of the fiscal discussion. So again, dash 13s, pretty much everything is in the 15th, in the dash 15s, except the discussion around deprivation. So we've distributed to you a set of documents that describe three particular policy options, if you will, to have in this bill. And I'm not sure which one. It's in that packet that's stapled. There's one on deprivation. And it goes through why... why deprivation is a policy that we should change. However, if you recall from the other day, the fiscal that the department is estimating at this point is approximately $29 million on top of what is assumed right now for the changes in the co-chair's budget. Primarily, most of that, they did some estimating, and what they found out that approximately 100 families every month are denied eligibility because of this criteria. And so as they modeled it, in addition to not only additional cash grants that they would need to provide in job supports and jobs programs, there would also be an increase in access to the Oregon Health Plan as part of TANF Medical. So that's why you have a $29 million fiscal on that. I still believe that removing that criteria is good public policy. I think we should just have a program that looks at income eligibility as the determining factor. As you can see, we are turning families away. It also, I think, provides incentive for families to live apart because of the needy status. If there's another parent, sometimes they move out or they have less contact with the child so the family can meet the criteria. However, I understand the fiscal. And conversations with the chair after Monday, trying to give a sense to the committee of prioritization if we were going to move forward a bill that had an additional fiscal on it. And because of the size of this fiscal, and this is a big change, my suggestion for an interim solution is the dash 13s, which would put the deprivation criteria back in, essentially take that out of our bill and say that will still continue to be a criteria. However, make a change to another statute that we haven't discussed that determines the amount of time an absent parent can spend with a child. Currently, an absent parent can't spend more than 12 months with a child or 12 hours a week with a child and still meet the deprivation criteria. What we're suggesting in the dash 13s is to move that 12 hours, to 30 hours per week. So by adding 30 hours a week, moving it from 12 to 30 hours a week, gives more time for the absent parent to be involved with the child in that child's home without having the other parent lose eligibility based on deprivation. And I explained that there in the bottom of the one-pager, what we're calling our interim solution. I would like to see this continue to be discussed with the department of how we can move to eliminating this criteria completely. But this would help not only have more interaction with the absent parent and the child, could also lead to increased child support collections because the parent would have more interaction with the child and hopefully would send us down the path to eventually eliminating deprivation. The department has said that it's inconclusive whether this would increase the caseload, so there would not be a fiscal to this. So that would address the $29 million issue. And I think the department probably wants to say something about this.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, we agree with this as an approach in that it does promote family stability and lets us begin to see what impact that offering that additional impact or contact could have in terms of both the family stability, potential for increased child support participation, and so forth.
So,
and just to clarify, the
dash 15 amendments, you feel that we've lost a lot of that, the large fiscal that would have accompanied
the
bill before the dash 13. I want to hear from the department.
Oh.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, yes. We can't estimate at this point really what that impact would be, but we think that it's a good beginning place and that it's reasonable as an approach.
Great. Thank you. Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify. There's a lot of information in the dash 13s. So the section that we're really looking at is page 2, starting on line 15. all the other language you see in the dash 13s are also in the 15s. It just happened to have other things in it. But those, the section we're looking at is starting on page 2, line 15.
So the assumption is that the parent does not live in the same home with the child, resides somewhere else, but spends up to 30 hours a week with the child, correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Any further questions?
If I could, then these don't specifically have another amendment because they're in the dash 15s, but the transitional medical assistance issue also has an additional fiscal of approximately 5.4. I included that at the bottom of this one pager. So I'm moving on to the transitional medical assistance. I would urge the committee to keep this in here, I think, as a priority. And as you recall, amendments that the transitional medical is an obscure little change that talks about how we count 3 months of being on three of the 6 month rule. As you'll see there, we're required for someone to be eligible for TANF extended medical, they have to be on on Oregon Health Plan for three of the previous 6 months. Am I getting that right? So what we're doing with the amendment is making sure that we can adjust what we do now to make sure that rule doesn't inhibit someone who comes into the program, is in the what we're calling the pre-TANF program, and all of a sudden jumps into the post-TANF program because they find employment, and they haven't been on medical long enough to then qualify for TANF extended or transitional medical. So this is trying to ensure that someone coming into the program is not unduly affected by the fact that they've moved into employment quicker than expected. They will continue to have that medical assistance. We feel that that support is critical for the success of being in the post-TANF program. The fiscal is a little over $5 million. I would urge the committee to leave this in the dash 15s and allow us to advocate for it in the Ways and Means process because it's, I think, very essential to the success of the post-TANF to have that medical assistance guaranteed for a small group of people who, or just in terms of how they come to the program, might not have that. And this document gives a nice summary of this, but we've talked about some of this before.
Right.
The second page on that packet is on the child support pass-through. Again, this is an additional fiscal than what's assumed in the governor's budget or the co-chair's budget, approximately $900,000. We've had a lot of discussion about the need for the pass-through. We have new opportunity with changes at the federal level to do this. There's a whole host of research to say that this is not only a great idea in terms of increasing child support payment participation, but that additional support for families could be critical in helping families move into self-sufficiency. And I would urge the committee to leave this in as well and allow us to advocate for it in the Ways and Means process. So
there's a fiscal on this amount?
$900,000 at the bottom of the page, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
So essentially we'd be adding approximately, give or take, around $6 million in addition to what is already earmarked for the TANF redesign. And I feel confident that we have a strong case to make for this being important to the program. And as someone who sits on the Ways and Means subcommittee, will do my best to advocate for that. And if we don't have the dollars, then we'll have that discussion, perhaps removing it. But I think if we're going to have, we're not getting to the Cadillac with this redesign, but this is a really important part of the redesign, I think, in terms of good public policy. So I would urge us to keep it in there in the dash 15s. And finally, Madam Chair, we do have one other amendment that we did not prepare additional information on because we've talked about it previously as well, the Dash 2 amendments. These were put forth after conversations with other advocates around, this is the increase in the income eligibility and pegging the grant level to the income level. As you remember, we haven't increased either essentially since 1991, and this would provide a clarification of what the income level should be, income eligibility level, and connecting that to the size of the cash grant. you recall from the other day, in the department's presentation, it has a sizable fiscal on it. I will leave it up. I would love to see us do this. I also know that it has a very large fiscal. I believe the department is estimating it at, they have an adjusted fiscal, but for the next biennium to do this, it would be approximately $43 million. It's unfortunate that we've let the program lag in certain ways to have to, it's a big gap to make up because we haven't had adjustments over time. I would like us to at least move this amendment and allow me to vote in favor of it, and I don't know if we'd attach it to the full bill. That would be up to the committee, but I would like at least the opportunity to get on the record that I think this is a good thing to do and be able to vote for the amendment, and then I'll leave it up to the discretion of the rest of the committee whether they want to move it, but it is a sizable fiscal.
Madam Chair, what amendment are we on?
I'm sorry, dash two.
Dash two.
We turned it out last. It came out on Monday, so I don't, you might have to look in your file. We apologize for not providing an additional copy. So just to review, and I, again, this has been a long process. I appreciate the patience of the committee. The dash twos are the income and grant level changes. The dash 13s are to remove deprivation and adjust the number of hours an absent parent can remain with the child. The dash 14s are the essentially the parents of scholars post-secondary education adjustment. And the dash 15s are everything else.
So, representative, or I'm not to whom, sure who to whom this should be directed. So, the dash 15s. What fiscal do we know there will be for that? Do we know?
Madam Chair, my assumption is the dash 15s are within. They assume the $200 million currently earmarked for the redesign in both. That's what I say, 200?
Mm-hmm.
We could take a 200. $20 million in the governor's budget and the co-chair's budget. The $900,000 fiscal for the child support pass-through, the 5.4 for the transitional medical assistance adjustment, and there will also be less savings because of the change in the sanction policy. The department had estimated more savings based on the sanction policy that they had proposed, so there'll be a little less savings in terms of how the sanction policy. They had assumed that they would, more individuals might be sanctioned, and then there'd be less cash payments going out, so there'll be a slight adjustment there. But in general, I think it's safe to say, without deprivation, I see the department is saying, in the dash 15s, unless you amend it, it does include the $29 million for deprivation. If you do the dash 13s, that would be removed.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Wilson.
Representative Kotek, I need to have you go through this one more time.
Absolutely.
For everything. I'm just absolutely.
And I apologize, we didn't have all the numbers to give you a cheat sheet, but.
So okay, if you could start with the dash 2s for me, please. And fiscal impact.
Yes, the dash 2s, and this will be a slightly different fiscal impact from what you had in the department's letter because they did a re-estimate. The dash 2s, which again are adjusting the income level and the cash grant, would be $43 million, 43.3 for the next biennium. The dash 13 is removing a fiscal from the dash 15s that removes the $29.1 million that would have been associated with the deprivation issue. The dash 14 has no fiscal at this time. The dash 15 assumes the $20 million in the governor's and the co-chair's budget. Has deprivation in there, but if you take it out, it assumes $900,000 for the child support pass-through, 5.4 for the transitional medical, and some adjustment in savings around the sanction policy. I think that's everything.
Okay, so have you got a grand total?
My grand total, from what I from the other day, I do. If we look at the dash 15s and assume that the committee decides to pass the dash 13, so I'm going to take out deprivation. From what I heard from the department and what I have, that amount would be 7.9 million additional fiscal on top of the 20 million currently earmarked. And I'll just say that's 5.4 for the transitional medical, a 0.9 or 900,000 for the child support, and an additional 1.6 million, which comes through the sanctioned savings, but I think we might have to readjust that when we get to Ways and Means. But currently the department had assumed 1.7 in savings, and with the new sanction policy as it's written, it would only be about 100,000 in savings, so we have to add 1.6 back in.
Madam Chair.
Representative Connell.
I'm sorry. 20 million in the initial package. I wrote down 7.9, that's the dash 15s.
Yes, without deprivation.
You know, this I think is becoming very confusing, certainly for me, and I think maybe for others. I'm wondering, as much as I wanted to pass this bill today, mm-hmm. if maybe we should hold off and maybe we could get something from you that lists these more clearly so that we don't have to sort of look through these amendments and see what this does and how much it costs.
Madam Chair, can I ask for clarification? Because I'm happy to provide whatever would make it easier. Is it primarily the lack of clarification around the fiscal or the policy elements and the adjustments on the amendments?
Speaking for myself, what I would like to do is see the policy adjustments, what kind of fiscal they carry with them. Does that make sense? And am I speaking for the rest of the committee? So people are looking at me blankly.
No, Madam Chair, I agree with you. I'm supportive of TANF. And I mean, I'll just speak for everybody. But I'm just struggling right now trying to grasp and stay up with where you're at. I mean, you know, and Todd's at and everything. And I'm just wondering, you know, I'm thinking, gosh, I wish we could have had a PowerPoint or something, you know, where we could have all just sat down and you've worked with us through this whole thing. Because I'm trying to write these numbers down and trying to gather with all these amendments now that are coming at us. And be truthful with you, I'm a little overwhelmed. Well, just a bit.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I think if you looked at it from the standpoint that the initial proposed change to deprivation that was in the original 2469, what Representative Kotek has proposed is really to remove that change. And so the $29 million impact is really removed from the equation in terms of an issue. So as we had testified, we thought it would be an add of $29 million. By her removing it, it now that takes that out of the picture. And so it really is the issue of the $5.4 million related to the transitional medical change and the added child support of $900,000 and then the adjustment to the sanction policy of an adjustment of $1.6 million. So what I ended up with was $7.9 million of additional cost above what is in the governor's budget of $20 million general fund.
So that's much less than what we had looked at on Monday.
Yes.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I followed all of that part. The piece that I'm missing was the dash twos, the increase in the cash grant of $43 million. Where's that?
Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, currently nowhere except in the dash twos.
Okay. Maybe I just interrupted, but we have the $20 million that's in the co-chair's budget. We have an increase in $7.9 million. I've got that total figured out. And then there's a third piece that's the $49 million that you basically want to argue for.
That's Madam Chair, Representative Cowan, that is correct. I want to make sure you've had the dash twos in front of you. I want to reiterate what the fiscal was. Make sure that you know that's an option. It does not appear in the omnibus. It's a standalone piece with an additional fiscal.
If that's the sum total, I'm okay with what we've got at this point. If there's more to it, I'd need to see it too.
I am, Madam Chair, I'm happy to come back. I'm happy to provide whatever, and I realize it's a lot of information, and believe me, I know. This is very complex. But it sounds like I'm not hearing any questions specifically about any of the substantive amendments. Because I want to make sure I have that clear, because if there's something I have to come back with that, I want to make sure.
Okay. I got a question.
Representative Gillian.
I want to make sure I understand the issue around the dash twos, which is pass-through and child support, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Gilliam, no, dash twos are not that.
Okay. I'm sorry.
So why don't you explain again?
Absolutely. The dash twos would create in statute a mechanism to say that we will peg our income eligibility requirements for the program at a certain level of the federal poverty level. And also attached to that income eligibility level, we would peg the percentage of the cash grant. And it would also adjust with inflation. Currently, we have a pretty static income level. And as we've talked about, the problem in the program is the level of which, the income level at which you can be eligible has really stayed static since the early 90s. And if you start to work and make too much money, you're off the program. Hence the need for the post-TANF program. Another way to approach this is let's increase the income eligibility level. The other issue is the cash grant has not, it would also seem to make sense to attach some level of the federal poverty line to the cash grant amount so we have some increase over time to keep the program accessible to a certain level of low-income families. So that's what the dash two does. Now, has a fiscal on it because you're increasing the access to the program. It really doesn't adjust the cash grant per se. In fact, in some places currently would actually decrease the cash grant that we're currently giving, but over time it would increase the level of the program's accessibility. But remember, if you increase the income level, you also have more people staying in the formal TANF program and working, so it increases your work participation rates. The document that you received last time from the Oregon Center for Public Policy addressed some of this. We have not spent as much time on discussing this, I understand that this is, compared to everything else, somewhat new. But we have brought it up at every time. It's just we haven't really talked about it at great length.
So, Representative, if we were to pass the bill with the dash 15 amendments,
mm-hmm.
we could hold, and we could pass that with recommendation that it go to Ways and Means, correct?
That is correct.
And what would we do then with the dash two amendments? Or would you just present those at Ways and Means to see if you could get that?
Madam Chair, we could present them at Ways and Means as well.
So I guess the question to this committee is, can we pass the bill as amended with the dash 15? We're assuming this is going to be $7.8 million more than the governor's recommended budget and more than the Ways and Street.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I believe that would be what you're describing would be the dash 13s.
Dash 13.
Because the 15s would.
Got it. Got it. All together. 14s and 15s all together, correct?
If you do it all together,
right,
Madam Chair,
okay,
that's
so
correct.
So we did all those. Then what we're talking about is $7.9 million more than what the governor's recommended budget and what the co-chair's budget had been, correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
So then we could send that to Ways and Means without the dash twos. Then they can deal with $7.9 million over the recommended budget by the co-chairs. They could also deal with the dash two amendments, and Representative Kotek is on that committee, as are other people who are really interested in TANF. And then it seems to me that we would be sending them a bill that is doable, that has our stamp on it, and they can deal with how much further they're willing to go with us.
Madam Chair, if I may, I think that was an excellent summary. If we send through, if we do the 13, 14, and 15s, we send a package that says this is a solid policy package that will increase the outcomes of our children and our families. It does have an additional fiscal on top of what's assumed right now. I think the $20 million estimate, and there are going to be changes in that estimate. There are going to be changes in the caseload. At this point, it's 7.9.
The $20 million in the co-chairs budget.
Right.
Okay, go.
I just think there's some wiggle room and flexibility on the $20 million as in the 7.9. But right now, what we know is that if you pass the 13, 14s, and 15s, it would be an additional $7.9 million on the fiscal. But you're sending the message to Ways and Means. This is a solid package. Do what you can to maybe add some more dollars in there. But we could, if we had to, remove those easily and keep within the $20 million fiscal. But I think by passing it on with those changes, you're sending a strong message of, can we do a little more? Because this would really even get us a little further in this opportunity to make some changes. So,
Representative Maurer.
I'm sure. Representative Kotek, I appreciate that. And unlike my more junior colleague,
sibling rivalry.
Wow.
No. I do think that first off, you're going to have to argue the additional $20 million in the co-chair's budget. And so I don't think that's just a given. And that I do believe that the way you have this packaged in the Dash 15, that you can pull each one of those out if you had to meet a budget line.
Mm-hmm.
And so from a policy perspective, and this was out, you know, I think we've got it to a more reasonable level, but from a policy perspective, this is, I think it is a solid package, but we can argue about various aspects of it in the Ways and Means process, or you can.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would be supportive of that 13, 14, 15, and in moving it.
Great. Representative Cowan?
Madam Chair, I would concur that makes a sensible split in the two. I'm finding it rather interesting that it's so easy for me to say, with just an extra $7.9 million fiscal, and then anybody else that comes up here and says they have a $200,000 fiscal impact, we go, oh, I don't know if we can find that. So it's sort of interesting how it all gets relative when you get enough zeros on it, I guess. But I do know that, and I mean that actually fairly seriously, because I think it's important that we sort of step back and take a look at just how monumental this whole process is. And I'm standing in awe, frankly, of Representative Kotek and your very capable staff and the efforts that have been put in by the department, because I know this is a huge undertaking. And I think I would have been lost on about the dash, I don't know what. So it's important, and I think that it will make a fairly monumental change in the way we do business in the state of Oregon and the way we treat individuals in the state who are faced with challenges that probably none of us sitting in this room would want to be faced with in our lifestyles. But I basically come down on the side of, is what we're doing going to be cost effective in the long run? Is it going to be cheaper on the other end of the spectrum? And I really do believe that this package will, in the long run, perhaps not save money in what we're spending, but save money in what we would have been spending if we had not done anything to help people move to self-sufficiency. So I like the way it's packaged at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cowan.
Madam Chair.
Representative Holton.
Well, I'm listening to this, and there's a part of me, and it doesn't have anything to do, but yet it still does have a part of it. We listened to Representative Nathanson last night in the little committee. We were talking about treatment dollars, and we're going to be listening to her bill next week. Along with that, there's potential of a bill that I have that somewhat kind of is a companion bill with hers, where she's wanting to go with treatment. You know, from what the co-chairs as well as, specifically the co-chairs, where the treatment dollars just aren't there.
And we're talking about treatment for mental health and
addiction. Yeah, that's right, and addiction. So, you know, I'm listening to this and I'm wanting to move for, in that, you know, Representative Kotek, you're an advocate for this on behalf of us here as well. you feel like being our advocate next week? You know, well, anyways.
Madam Chair.
That's a problem we have, you know. So I'm listening to this, and I'm saying, mm-hmm. wow, you know, we're shifting these dollars here right now over for TANF, but what are we planning on doing with, you know, because this is part of our responsibility as well for the treatment end of it.
Madam Chair, Representative Olson, I think that's an excellent comment. I think all the comments, I really do appreciate it. I think we're in a unique position, unlike other new initiatives or other funding discussions that we might see in this committee. We have to make changes to our program to meet the new federal guidelines. We will be penalized if we do not meet our work participation rates. We have an opportunity. This is a major redesign of a program, and we haven't been doing things well for many years in some ways. We've done things, some things well and some things not so well. And we have a population of individuals still in this program who will, some are moving along to a deadline on their assistance that we really need to make sure it can move into self-sufficiency for their kids, for their families, for everyone. And so it, in some ways, I understand there are a lot of options this session on what we can fund. We are being pushed to do this by the federal government. It's our opportunity to do it right for the kind of cost savings that everyone, I think, wants to see. So in some ways, it's a little bit of a unique situation compared to maybe some of the other things. But I understand, you know, we want to make sure that there's funding for a lot of important things. I can't disagree with that.
My intent is to move this unless I have any people who are... Representative Gilliam.
May I just ask another question? I don't want to minimize what this can mean to families. I owe that mainly to you and to your staff because I think you've been very good at not only doing the work but also communicating that. I would minimize my ability to understand the fiscal. But I just want to ask you, I know you can't, but what are your thoughts about quantifying that? I believe it philosophically, what you both have said, Representative Cowan and yourself. I believe that you can't pull the rug out. We have to meet the federal sort of gun pointed at us. But how do we quantify that, or can we? I just want to put that out there.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, Representative Gilliam, we have attempted to quantify that, and in actuality, that's, you know, how we arrived at what's in the governor's budget. It is a lot of new activity, a lot of new approaches, so there's as much science as art in that process. But we have, and we'd be happy to sit down and go through that with you, if you'd like.
Okay, I'd like to do that. And then a follow-up, if I may.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding the Dash 2s, Representative Kotek, you are fearless. And so if you think that you can advocate the Dash 2s from your position on the that wonderful committee, the next committee, Ways and Means, then I believe you. Is there any wisdom to a compromised Dash 2 today? I don't know if you do that with the percentage level of poverty guidelines or whatever that we could be comfortable with fiscally. Or is it just better for you to fight that Dash 2 battle yourself and take out the 43.3?
Madam Chair, Representative Gilliam, thank you for the question. When I started this process, my goal was let's send the biggest Cadillac we can send to Ways and Means and let them deal with the fiscal. The reality is, I know what the budget looks like. We do need to address the issues raised in the Dash 2s. The department is going to have to come back already. We've passed the budget bill the other day that said they need to come back and talk about how they're meeting maintenance of effort next year. I'd like to have a continuing conversation about this part of the program. I don't think I worry about attaching it to the bill going forward. I'd rather have the Dash 2 separate to advocate for them separately in Ways and Means to keep bringing the topic up. I just think because of the fiscal and whether or not there's some give and take in the fiscal, that's a significant new investment in TANF to make those changes. You think the 27.9, which we're essentially recommending right now, is a lot. It's another $43 million. The problem is we've let things slide so long, it's cost a lot to catch up. And that's a discussion we have to have. So I think I'm more comfortable leaving the dash twos aside to deal with them in ways and means, to be very honest.
Okay, well, that helps me, Madam Chair. And I don't want to belabor this, mainly because Representative Kotek has left her cell phone on, and I've texted several of your constituents already up here, and I'm eager to get you back up here. So,
she better have that off.
I'm eager to move on.
Thank you. Thank you. Any last questions? We do need to move on. Representative Kotek, would you come back up here? Thank you. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate all the work. I can't begin to imagine how many hours of work that the agency and Representative Kotek and her staff. This man lives in his office, and thank God his mother sends food for him that he sometimes shares with the rest of us. And I'm not kidding. Yeah. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Representative Kotek.
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move that the committee consider the dash 13s, adding them to House Bill 2469.
Representative Kotek moves the dash 13 amendments to House Bill 2469. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Representative Kotek?
Madam Chair, I would move the dash 14 amendments to House Bill 2469.
Representative Kotek moves the dash 14 amendments to House Bill 2469. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move the dash 15 amendments to House Bill 2469.
Representative Kotek moves the dash 15 amendments to House Bill 2469. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Representative Kotek.
Madam Chair and very patient members of the committee, I would move House Bill 2469 as amended to the Joint Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kotek moves the House Bill 2469 as amended to the committee, the Joint Committee on Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Thank you. Susan, would you take the roll, please?
Representative
Callen.
Aye.
Representative
Gilster.
Excused.
Representative
Gilman. Aye.
Representative Kotek.
Aye.
Representative
Mack.
Aye.
Representative
Olson.
Yes.
Chair
Truman.
Aye.
Thank you, Committee
members. House Bill 2469, as amended, has the constitutional majority and is declared passed. Fantastic, Representative. Good
thank
job.
Thank you, everyone.
You bet. Thank you.
Again, we're making history this week. With this
yes, bill. We are indeed. So this, for those of you who aren't aware of this bill, this really is a monumental bill, and a great deal of work has been done, and they've done a great job. So thanks again to the agency and to Representative Kotek and her staff. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2469, and I'm opening the work session on 3113. Is that right? Okay.
Why don't you share with the audience that next will be this one?
Okay, and next we're going to hear House Bill 3032. And colleagues, I'm hoping you can stay as long as it takes. I hope to get through the agenda. Does anybody have a problem with that? All right, thank you.
No problem.
I have a bunch of children here. Andy.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. House Bill 3113 is a bill that would amend the duties of the Department of Human Services to include investigations of allegations of child abuse at child care facilities. There is a dash 3 amendment that I believe Representative Maurer would probably be the best to summarize.
Chair.
Great. Representative Maurer.
Yes. Madam Chair, the dash 3 amendments I believe are 98% where we need to be, and I know the department is going to have a couple words about changes, and I was not here yesterday, and so I am not exactly sure what words they want to change, but unless it's a substantive change, I would like to move this and allow them to work that on the Senate side. And just as a follow-up, the intent of this bill is not to create a mountain of work for either law enforcement or the department, but to fill a crack in statute so that we don't have two agencies or two jurisdictions looking at each other saying, you're in charge, and that we don't allow children in these facilities and in these settings to be the subject of abuse when the state has the moral obligation to do something about it. And so that is the intent of the bill, is to fill the crack. And so that's why, or that's the genesis of this bill, and I hope that that is viewed as the ultimate outcome of it. So,
great.
Concluding.
Do you want to talk about? Are we looking just at the Dash 3 amendments?
The Dash 3 are a gut and stuff of the original bill.
Okay.
And I would invite the department to come forward and provide their comments, because clearly the department is carrying the water on this one.
Do you want your staff to come up to the table also?
Do you
want
to be at the table?
Thank you.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Una Swanson. I'm the Child Protective Services Program Manager for the Department of Human Services. And we'd like to say today that we very much appreciated working with Representative Maurer and his staff, and they've been very patient with our recommendations for changes. And at this point, we feel very comfortable with the language. There's one section where we're recommending what would mean a minor change, but it is an important change, and we've been assured that we can work through that on the other side if that's the direction
in the Senate.
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm just I have not heard the words, so I'm okay. Waiting with bated breath to hear what the changes are.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I will try as best I can to capture that. If you'll look at the Dash 3 amendments beginning on line 5.
On the first page. Okay.
You see the addition of the language, if the Department of Human Services or a law enforcement agency receives an oral report of child abuse, the department and the agency, and you'll see that that's a change from the language, in addition to some other wording, a change from the Department of Human Services or law enforcement. And what I'd like to say is the intent was to have that section included in the context of child care investigations. This leading clause speaks to all investigations, and there may be some unintended consequences both for law enforcement. There are some things currently that the department may look into that law enforcement may not have a piece of, and vice versa.
Right. So what, if you have a response to that?
I'm very comfortable with that change, and if we could do it a conceptual amendment, I would be fine with that.
And I'm not sure that we can, but what I'd like to, and what I'm just thinking off the top of my head, maybe you could write a comment to that effect that Representative Maurer and I could both sign, so that when this does go to the Senate, this is understood that this change will be made, because you're absolutely right. This just opens the door to all kinds of reports that are not intended.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. Chair Tomei, members of the committee, we'd be happy to do that, and we appreciate that.
Great.
This should not, for the record, I'm Allison McMullen, Legislative Assistant to Ron Maurer. This should not in any way change the fiscal that we have been assured will not be in any way significant.
Okay. If the change were made, it will not be a fiscal.
It will not be
fiscal. As it is, it would be a huge fiscal.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Great. Anything more on this? Any other questions? Great bill. Isn't it nice to see a three-page bill?
Well, Representative Maurer said he was 98%.
Oh.
And I wondered if Representative Pencil Sharpener is more comfortable now.
I'm absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. Never 100%.
No.
99.99.
Okay, good.
We'll take it. It rounds off.
Rounds off.
Thank you so much, folks. Thanks for the work you've done on this. Any further Discussion? All right. Representative Maurer.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3113 be adopted.
Representative Maurer moves the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3313. Any discussion? 3113. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anyone knows? Nope. Okay. Representative Maurer.
And Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 3113, as amended, be adopted with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Maurer moves House Bill 3113 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation, assuming that we have a memo from the Department of Human Services that will accompany this over to the Senate side.
And Madam Chair, I concur with that.
Great. All right. Susan, will you call the roll?
Representative Cowan.
Aye.
Representative Gail Joseph.
Excused?
Representative
Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Aye. Having received the constitutional majority, House Bill 3113 goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Passes and goes to the floor. Pass the recommendation, and I close the work session on House Bill 3113. And I open up a first public hearing on House Bill 3032. Okay. Representative Wisnett, come on up.
House Bill 3032 is a bill that would require the State Commission on Families to create the children's budget. It would require the Commission to recommend the children's budget to the Governor and also to identify the policy priorities that affect children and to align these priorities with expenditures. It would also require the Governor to include in the budget report as required by Oregon Statute 291.216, a children's budget.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning, Representative.
Honorable committee members. Thank you for hearing House Bill 3032. You just commented on a bill about 3 pages. This is one page, 7 lines. So I hope all the committee members have had a chance to read it. It is a simple, concise bill with a good purpose. Children. Many states produce an annual children's budget. California has published a children's budget since 1993. The purpose of the annual California children's budget is to facilitate the examination of the governor's formal proposed budget submitted to the legislature. At a youth conference several years ago, hosted by the Forum for Youth Investment, the Governor's Council, and the National Conference of State Legislators, I attended and learned about the value and this initiative for all states to have a children's budget. Traditional budget documents are organized according to local agency bureaucratic lines, not according to how children, youth, families experience the effects of these agencies. However, with children's and youth budget, we can organize it according to the people, to the children, and to their needs. A children's budget will help us make better decisions with better results, improve coordination and efficiencies, provide a shift towards investments in prevention, support for building partnerships, more effective advocacy. A children's budget may or may not produce more funding, but it will help us use the available funding more responsibly and more effectively. I'm going to provide you a copy, I didn't want you to have ahead of time, of the Children's Oregon Children's Budget Project for 2000 and 2005. This budget was produced by Eco Northwest with a grant from the Children's Institute. The budget project looked at all the money Oregon receives devoted to low-income children in Oregon. The report was to help decision makers and the general public better understand how Oregon addresses the needs of a low-income children so resources can be allocated in a way that has the greatest possible benefit. This is what we're trying to do with the children's budget. I'm joined at the table by Dave Fiscom, who represents the Coalition of County Children and Family Commissions, 36. Your counties, your commissions. I had the honor and pleasure of serving for over 6 years on the Deschutes County Commission for Children and Families, and I know how important the county commissions are. This children's budget will also help each of our local county commissions. However, Madam Chair, they could also use the $4 million additional funds requested in House Bill 3034. This additional funding would enable your local commissions with the flexible funding to address other specific needs in your counties, your commissions, your counties. Thus, Madam Chair, I strongly urge this committee to pass this bill, House Bill 3032, and I hope you will have a work session. It's a short bill. You can read it and decide what it's about. And I would encourage this committee to also have a public hearing and pass House Bill 3034 to help your commissions and your counties. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any questions of Representative
Fiskum? Mr. Fiskum has some comments to it.
Well, all right.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, Dave Fiskum, as Representative Wisnett says, here representing the Coalition of County Children and Families Commissions. It's a pleasure to join one of our champions at this table to make a couple comments on his proposal to create the proud creation of a children's budget. I want to thank the representative for introducing this very important yet brief seven-line bill, and Madam Chair, to you for hearing the bill this morning. I should say for the record that there were four of the directors of local commissions who had hoped to be here today, but their schedules would not allow travel to Salem. It's important to mention their names because in some cases they have advocated you consider this and other bills in this committee. Wendy Lebo from Multnomah County, Bill Thomas from Washington County, Hillary Saraceno from Deschutes County, Representative Wisnett's County, as well as Dan Murphy down the street from Marion County, who could not be here today. Representative Wisnett has described his proposal well, so I will not repeat his words except to emphasize a couple points. The two main objectives, as I see it, of this bill. One, it will illustrate in one place the range of investments this state makes for children. Further, it will illustrate, I think, the gaps and shortfalls in funding for such programs because, as a veteran of state government for too many years to count, I know that funding for children's programs is spread far and wide throughout the state budget, making the real impact, pro, con, good, bad, up, down, nearly invisible, tough to find, tough to understand, tough to ascertain. If such a children's budget were created, my assumption is, in fact, that the state's investments in the Children and Families Commission, on which Representative Wisnett serves, those would be reflected. Since 1999, you need to know that the commission has experienced a 50% decrease, in the locally invested funds, flexible dollars that are used at the local level to serve children, to leverage private sector support, to mobilize community resources, and results in thousands of hours of volunteer activity at the local level through commissions in your own communities. The governor's recommended budget for children and families represents a substantial investment. The governor is, in fact, one of the Children and Families Network's major advocates. Unfortunately, the co-chair's budget made substantial cuts in those investments, and in one case, in fact, basic capacity dollars for local commissions zeroed that amount of money. That recommendation, subject to consideration by the Human Services Ways and Means Subcommittee, of course, would threaten the very survival of some of these programs, or at least the services that these programs deliver. And over the past weeks, just anecdotally, I've had the privilege of meeting with a number of commissions and hearing the incredible stories of the work that occurs locally. One of the most impressive was in Multnomah County, the efforts to feed hungry children beyond the school system. And those kinds of programs, correcting methamphetamine abuse, serving children of incarcerated parents, a huge priority in Clackamas County, for example. It's these kinds of services that I submit to you would be highlighted by a children's budget were one developed. So, with that, let me close by underlining the coalition I represent supports Representative Wisnett's bill, House Bill 3032. So I want to thank him for crafting it, for getting it introduced, and I would encourage you in due course to send it on to Ways and Means because I believe it has, from this committee, a subsequent referral. Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer questions. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you both. Any questions, Mr. Gentleman? Representative Callan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I haven't yet seen the. Do you have a fiscal estimate? I guess I love the simplicity, but there's these little details about simplicity, like the State Commission on Children and Families shall create, and that costs money.
And this is my bill, Madam Chair and Representative Kelman. It's my bill, and I, you know, to be honest, I have had some informal conversations with the commission, and you know, they would probably have to have a half a person or something to oversee this, but hopefully it would not be any more than a little bit of staff. Because all you're doing is, what you're doing is you're taking the money that we're budgeting out of different silos and putting it in another presentation. So you're not creating more money, but it helps you decide if you need more money or you're putting your money in the wrong place. But it will take some work, either contract or in-house to put this together. And until they decide, you know, what they want to do and how they're going to present it, this is just saying do it. You know, you could start off small and then build it more. As the handout you're going to receive talks about how we looked at a five-year plan on one specific issue. And that's very detailed. So you could start off the budget doing this, which I think is good, and I think it would help. I've served on Ways and Means, and give you a great picture of where you're spending your money, you know, from taking it out of these different silos. So the physical, I don't anticipate, it could start off probably zero and build it up to what you're wanting and see how much detail the decision makers and the governor wants to do. It's actually, you know, we're, I guess, tasking the governor to do this, but because the Commission on Children and Families does report to the governor. And as I said, it's my experience in the committee, seminar that I attended in Chicago was very impressive, and a lot of states are doing it, and I think it's time for Oregon to step up.
Thank you, Representative. Any further questions?
Madam Chair, I guess so an agency would have to evaluate each one of their programs, and some of them would be obvious that they're children's programs, and then some programs are not going to be necessarily obvious, and so they're going to have to parse out what part of the budget is for children.
Yes.
And which one is
for Madam Chair and Representative Meyer, this would be the commission or whoever they hire to do this, with their job would be to look at the agency budgets and say, you know, here you're spending money for this and juvenile, and DHS is sending it here, spending so much money here, and for this age group or this special need people.
Okay.
Any further questions? Thank you very much, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We
would appreciate a workshop and a vote. Thank you.
A workshop?
Work session.
Got it.
Florida.
I know. Representative, I'm sorry I didn't call on you sooner. We had a huge agenda and things got rather confused. So thank you for coming back down to testify. There are only these two people who had signed up to testify. See no one else showing interest? All right. So I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3032. And let's see, where am I? Open up the House Bill on 20. Pardon?
Madam Chair, will we get some handouts or something? Did he leave anything?
Okay. Hold
them. Right. I just want to make sure we're going to get them. I don't care when.
Because,
thank you.
Because we need more to read.
Right. I know.
Yeah. I can't deal with
two lines. I just want to make sure enough.
Madam Chair, if I may, the document you're getting from the Children's Institute in Echo Northwest actually has a very interesting couple of slides on how we're not funding TANF. So, you know, I just point those out to you, how we've decreased our investment in certain programs over the years. Because it is a kids' program. So.
Thank you for that, Representative. All right. As I tried to say, we're going to open up.
Yeah.
I think I closed the public hearing on House Bill 3032, just for good measure. And I will open up the hearing on House Bill. Actually, are we in work session? Are we in work session with 2175? Yes. Work session on 2175. Andy.
Thank you, Chair. House Bill 2175 would authorize the Department of Human Services to use abuse and neglect reports to determine fitness of employees and volunteers and to provide care through the department, community health partners, and developmental disability programs. There is a -2 amendment. The -2 amendment, I think, is probably, Chair, would be best explained by the department. We just got those, and I'd rather not try to summarize them.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Just waiting for you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Clyde Psyche. I'm the Deputy Director for Operations for the Department of Human Services. And with me is Eva Kutosh, who is our manager for our Office of Investigations and Training. I'd just like to start by saying we did have a chance to review the Dash 2 amendments this morning, and we're fine with them. And I'll turn it over to Eva to kind of walk the committee through them quickly.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is a bill, as you know, we created entirely, not just amendments to the statute. And so we had sent it to Legislative Council and had a few things we wanted to fix, which is what the Dash 2 amendments did, to be sure that the coverage for use of the abuse and neglect information only applied to the department, to its employees, and to volunteers, and to also clarify that the second half of the bill that calls for a work group to spend a couple of years looking at how we might apply this to our providers out in the community system were clearly separated out, and that's basically the function of the Dash 2 amendments, is to clarify those points.
Okay, any questions? Representative Cowan.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'm thinking, I apologize, I'm shuffling through my notes here. I really do need some walkthrough with the amendment, and I'm specifically referring to the testimony that we had from Jan Kroll, representing Shangri-La and the Oregon Rehabilitation Association, asking that they be included in the conversation, and the follow-up that I had received was that they had not been involved with the rewriting, but they had specifically asked that if it moves forward, that the membership of the committee include the advocates and counties and the cost-benefit analysis to the committee charge, and so I need some help knowing whether that was it or is in here. I couldn't listen and read and look at my notes all at the same time.
Chair Tomei and Representative Cowan, we did in the Dash 2 amendment structure the bill so that three things I think that the department is taking into consideration in moving forward during this two-year period. Number one, we realize that there will be fiscal and workload impacts on providers, and that's why we're proposing a two-year period to do that work to determine what that impact is going to be. We have committed that the work group is going to be a very diverse and broad-based work group. We plan to bring in representatives from the DD community, the mental health community, the alcohol and drug and substance abuse community, as well as our senior and mental health county counterparts and partners. And so this is going to be a very inclusive process rather than an exclusive process. And the other thing we've committed to is that within the work group, if we can't come up with agreement to move this forward so that everybody's comfortable and everybody can agree to the plan, then we're not going to move the plan forward, or we will not move the plan forward until everybody can sign off on it and has a degree of comfort with it, because we don't want to further burden our partners and providers who already have quite a burden administratively.
Thank you, Tom. Any further questions?
Yeah, Madam Chair. Kind of address the question that Representative Cohen asked anyways. I've had some discussion, actually quite a bit here this past week, with Patty O'Sullivan, as well as with Jan Kroll. And some of the concerns that Jan had, from what I recall, did deal with their involvement initially. They're at a point right now, and that's under the Section 3, Sub 1. They can live with that. Okay. The next thing that they were concerned about was the cost-benefit analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've touched on that. And she was at a point where she's okay with that now, too. But the main thing was that she was hoping to have some write-in in this, and I guess I'll throw this at you here while we're in the middle of this right now.
Sure.
Dealt with no fiscal impact to the provider family as a result of this. And from what I gather out of this is, should you be in the process of doing an investigation due to a complaint, the provider, well, for example, Shangri-La, having one of their employees working for them, would they be in a position of, should they put that person on administrative leave or leave that person continue to work? And if they do, whose responsibility is it, you know, for the fiscal part for payment?
Sure.
And I think that was kind of the bottom line that I saw.
Chair Tobey and Representative Olson, I know part of Jan's concerns comes from the fact that when we instituted the criminal record check for providers, they were concerned because it's the timeliness of the process is not what it should be. But the reason on the criminal record side we have issues is because if we have a hit and we have to send a national criminal record check to FBI, then we're kind of at the mercy of the FBI on how what time they take to respond to us. And quite frankly, it takes 46 weeks for us to hear back from the FBI. And so during that time, you know, the question, what do we do with the person while we're waiting for the FBI records to come back? I think that will be somewhat mitigated by the fact that the information we're going to be using, as requested by this bill, is all Oregon information. It's right at our fingertips. There's not that 4 to 6 week waiting period, and I think as part of the planning process, we want to be very clear about what the review process is and assign very strict timelines to that to help mitigate that, because I very much understand their concern there.
And that's part of the task of this committee, to be working on those issues, right? So it's not a decision that we're making today. The decision we're making is to set up this committee that will be working in the interim, correct?
Chair Tomei, the decision or the bill speaks to giving us, first of all, the authority so we can immediately begin this process for employees and volunteers, and then sets up the committee so that during the interim we can develop a plan that we can bring back to the next legislative session to make sure there are no unintended consequences and to mitigate the burden on providers.
Great. Thank you, Clyde. Any further questions? Yes, Representative Cotter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Different topic. As I'm rereading this, I understand the need for sharing potential reports. I guess I'm focused on the report issue, because we hear from the department, we get a lot of reports at the state. We know only a certain percentage of them are even investigated.
Mm-hmm.
At what level of report are we talking about here? Because there's a good chance that there's some founded nature to the reports, but you mentioned reports. You don't say founded cases. You don't say investigated reports. At what level will you be utilizing these? I'm just curious, because there are different levels,
sure.
And some reports don't go anywhere because they're not at all valid.
Madam Chair, Representative Kotek, we're fully aware of the complexities of setting up this kind of a system, and one of those is, I think it was mentioned at the last hearing, the issue of different definitions, different statutes for different parts of our department that serve either seniors or people with disabilities or children. Having looked at a number of other states, almost half the states in the country now have some system whereby they use their abuse information investigative reports to screen employees and volunteers. I can tell you that one of the conversations we've had so far is that we would identify certain level of severity, and certainly it would only be substantiated reports where the person has had some opportunity for due process to respond to the allegations in the report that were founded. And so we would not be, I think Jan mentioned last time, Carl, worrying about potential of using someone who made a medication error where there was a minimal amount of potential harm or risk. We'd be looking at the more serious kinds of substantiated allegations, such as sexual abuse or physical abuse that did not make it to the criminal system, which you probably know many of them don't. And that's part of our concern in wanting to use this information, because there are some very serious things that happen to people, and we don't presently have the ability to do it. And I have to add that we have had these conversations with many people, including providers, family members, advocates, for more than 5 years within the department as well. And it is a very complex challenge to tackle, and many of those conversations have been around unfortunate cases that have happened. So we feel a real obligation to do something to protect people, and we don't want to be stymied by how big the challenges that we have to, or the hurdle is that we have to overcome. So I think this in some way forces us to have the conversation, to have this this committee for a couple of years. And as Clyde said, if we can't come to some agreement and can't look at other models in other states that will help us to do that, then that'll be the end of it, and this bill ends in July of 2009.
Madam Chair,
follow up.
Thank you for that extra information. I guess I want to clarify for the record that you're talking about substantiated reports, whatever yes. system they're coming from, because, again, a lot of reports are received, some of them without any merit.
Right.
Or if they had a lot of merit, we'd be certainly investigating a lot more than we do. I'm speaking of child abuse neglect specifically. And I might even suggest clarifying that on the Senate side. I think the substantiated is important because we do receive a lot of reports, and we want to make sure we're not unfairly targeting someone who, when there's no basis for that. So I'll
Thank
just
you.
Mention that for the record.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative. Any further questions or concerns? Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson? Yeah. Madam Chair, I'd move then -2 amendments be moved into House Bill 2175.
Representative Olson moves the -2 amendments to 2175. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 And Madam Chair, I'd move House Bill 2175 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2175 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? All right, Susan, call the roll, please.
Representative
Kelly?
Aye.
Representative Dilser? Aye. Representative Koza? Aye. Representative Kelly? Aye. Representative Olson?
Aye.
Chair Tomei?
Aye.
House Bill 2175, as amended, has received the constitutional majority and is declared passed. And Representative Dilser, I think it's time you carried the bill.
Well, so do I.
Representative Gilliam will be the carrier on the floor. Thank you. Oh, great. And I will close the work session on 2175, and I will open up a work session on 3113 and assign Representative Maurer to carry 3113 and close the work session. All right. Now we're going right
to
it. What's that?
Susan is the one that caught it. Thank you, Susan.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Okay. I think our last bill is 3139. I open up a work session on House Bill 3139. Thank you, committee, for staying and working.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. House Bill 3139 is a bill that would create a general assistance program fund as part of the Treasury. This is as amended. I'll jump ahead of myself here, Chair. Why don't I explain for the benefit of the committee and
yes.
the audience. House Bill 3139 has been a significant amendment has been presented to the bill. The amendment would essentially insert the contents of House Bill 2914 and also the 2914-1 amendment, which had been before this committee previously. The amendment to 3139 would also contain a clarification that the general assistance program under the bill would only apply for adults ages 18 to 64. So to get bent to the contents, procedurally, that's what's happened. This is a measure that has been changed dramatically by these amendments. The bigger picture, as amended, House Bill 3139 would create the General Assistance Program Fund as part of the Treasury, separate and distinct from the general fund. It would declare an emergency in this program. It would be effective upon passage. Chair, I think it would make sense for John to come forward in the meeting.
John?
Thank
go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen with the Oregon Law Center. I worked with the Hunger Relief Task Force and the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities on the basic aspects of this bill, and also with your committee staff. We're supportive of the amendments that will create the General Assistance Program in this new vehicle, the bill that's before you today.
Colleagues, as the staff mentioned, we heard this bill under another number several weeks ago. And it was one where, pardon?
2914.
Correct.
Okay.
And it was a bill I think we showed a great deal of interest in. In fact, Representative Gilliam suggested that we pass it immediately. I think, yes, you did. And I think we all, if you remember, we heard testimony, John, correct me if I'm wrong, that this, we're talking about the poorest of the poor, the people who had potentially would have been able to apply for SSI and SSD.
DI.
And there had not been the services available in the state to help them process that. And so we cut funding for this program for, what, last three sessions?
Madam Chair, it was eliminated once, then restored, and then finally eliminated again in January of 2005, if I recall.
Okay. So we're looking at a huge fiscal, and there's no way around it. It seems to me that we need to send it on to Ways and Means, and we'll let Ways and Means grapple with this. It is one of those heartbreaking situations where if people had children, there would be TANF might be available to them. But since these people are disabled and they have no children, they, in essence, have no income. So I would like to pass this out today and send it to Ways and Means and let Representative Kotek fight for this one like she is for everything else that is good and holy. Yes, Representative.
I didn't understand the switcheroo on the numbers. What do we do?
We've done what's called a gut and stuff. We put this into a different bill.
Okay. So now using 3139.
Correct.
Okay.
Terrible phrase, isn't it? Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to sort of make note. I think the letter that I shared with the committee was sort of one of those things that discussed from an attorney in Florence by the name of Ron Gerber, and it just sort of discussed globally the challenges with people getting their medical assessment needs met in order to be able to potentially qualify for SSI. And so I think now in time I have no idea where, even in my notes, let alone anyone else's, that letter is floating, but I simply want to put it into the record that it probably relates at this point in time as closely to House Bill 3139 as anything. And I say that in terms of the encouragement that I know that this bill will carry a huge fiscal and there will be real challenges in the conversation in Ways and Means. But if we can at least find some methodology within our system to get people those basic pieces of assistance they might need to be able to qualify for a federal program that's laying out there like SSI, I just think morally and ethically we need to make that possible. And so that's the reason I'm sharing that in this particular discussion, that I'd really like that message carried forward with this bill, even if we aren't able to encompass all of what it asks in the long-term outcome of this session.
And I think there are good advocates in that committee, Representative. Thank you.
I'm sure there are. Thank you.
And there's obviously a lack of revenue, but we'll hope that the committee will do the best that it can. Any other discussion? Representative Kotek.
Madam Chair, I'm just pleased we're moving this on to Ways and Means. I think that was probably the most compelling testimony that I've heard all session.
No.
And it does complement what we're doing in TANF. We're saying we need to help folks get on federal programs, and we can't leave them in the lurch while they're trying to do
yes.
it.
Yes. Yes. Any further discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
What was our ballpark? Because I don't have my notes.
I think it was $11 million, if I recall.
I just
close to.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the department has a fiscal that would also include the medical assistance. It's higher than $11 million. Advocates have used $11 million as the baseline for the cash assistance, the staffing assistance, but there would be additional expenses in the Oregon Health Plan as well.
Madam Chair, that gets to that comment from the letter that we received from Representative Cowan. People need to get the medical coverage to do that evaluation.
Right.
Madam Chair, I wanted to...
Representative Gillian.
Thank you. I just wanted to say, you alluded to what I had said earlier, and I still feel that way, not only but partly because of the integrity of this witness and the others that we heard. If you... You may not, but if you believe, as I do, that in the spectrum of emergencies that we're going to fund, then we just really need to fund this one. And I was thinking back to Representative Olson's comments. It's so hard to put priorities, and we're going to face these mental health issues next work session or next committee. All of these are important, but I just have to reiterate that this one struck me as the most immediate. And if that's true, then, and you agree with me, then I think we need to move this out and get it funded for the folks that
need it. That's my intent today, to move it out. And maybe, Representative Kotek, when this bill comes before your committee, maybe you could let this committee know so that some of us might be able to go down and testify at the committee, the compelling testimony that we heard and how important we think this bill is.
That's a great idea. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good. Any further comments? All right. Andy?
Madam Chair, I'd move that the Dash 1 amendments would be moved into, is this 3139?
Uh-huh.
Into House Bill 3139.
Representative Olson moves Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3139. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
And Madam Chair, I would move then that House Bill 3139 would be moved to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 3139 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Susan?
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Elster?
Excused.
Representative Gillian?
Aye.
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 House Bill, did I just pass? 3139 as amended, passed with the constitutional majority, and I declare it passed. And let's see, you don't need a carrier. It goes to Ways and Means, and I'm sure, Representative Kotek, that you will do a good job for us.
We'll get that a hearing so we can have a conversation about it.
Yes, at least. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, of the committee.
You're welcome. Any other business? Look at this. 2 minutes to spare. Thanks so much for sticking in today. We did a lot of hard work. We will meet again at 8:30 on Monday, and either 8:30 or 9 on next Wednesday. We'll wait and let you know on that, but probably no earlier than 8:30. Any other business?
Madam Chair, I'm okay with the no tie thing, but what do you think about the coat over the back of the chair? I don't know.
Do you think we should have a dress code?
It's your call. But
okay, we'll work on it.
Okay.
With no further ado, I close the House Committee on the Human Services and Women's Wellness.
I just, you know.